The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
All right, so as you'll know here on Off the Ball, all week we are promoting Formal Friday, which is taking place tomorrow in aid of our frontline heroes. We have linked up with all the other media brands in this building, News Talk, Today FM, 98FM, Spin 1038 and Spin Southwest, all with the aim of raising as much money as possible for our frontline heroes. You're well used to Dress Down Friday. Every day is a Dress Down Day right now. So tomorrow is going to be Formal Friday. On Off the Ball, we are going to be dressing up to the nines. I've heard rumours that Ger Gilroy is going to be wearing his wife's wedding dress on OTB AM, so that's worth watching out for. We're going to be wearing tuxes. We're going to be spruced up as much as we can spruce ourselves up. And we're asking you to do the exact same thing if you're working from home. Just make the effort tomorrow, and more than that, donate as well. And all the money will go to our frontline heroes. Just get on to offtheball.com/donate. And all week we've been talking to sports people who are very much working on the front line. And I'm delighted that one of them joins me now, the Donegal All-Star nominated goalkeeper, Sean Patton, who is working as a guard in Navan, is with me. How are you keeping, Sean?
Hi, Nathan. How's things?
Not too bad. How's things with you?
Not too bad. Trying to keep myself busy, you know.
Yeah, so you're working as a guard in Navan, but you're literally, is it just out of Templemore?
Yeah, I'm down. I think this is my eighth or ninth week coming into it. So kind of freshly out of Templemore, just.
Yeah, baptism of fire.
It is. It's kind of, it's funny, like, you know, you're going into kind of the station being the junior person, but after 3 or 4 weeks, I wasn't a junior person anymore. There was a couple other fresh recruits kind of come out of the Templemore as well. So, but it's been an interesting few weeks, to say the least, you know. But it's been enjoyable as well.
So, had you expected to be on the front line from 8-9 weeks ago, or was the whole process sped up? Because obviously, we need as many Gardaí on the beat as possible.
No, well, I was expected to come out. I had done my full course of training down in Tipperary there, so I was glad to get allocated my station, you know, and glad to get out of the college and see the real life experience. So I've been enjoying it so far.
When all of this was really starting to break and there was awareness growing that the lockdown was coming and the schools were being shut and that the life was, as we know it, was probably going to stop, and you were going to be on the front line, fresh out of college, essentially. Like, what were your thoughts? Was there fear there, or was it something you were very much ready to hit head on?
It was a funny way to kind of come upon it. You know, my first 2 weeks was kind of, as you say, a baptism of fire. The place was fairly hectic and busy, and nobody really had a lot of time to kind of give you much advice. Although the unit that I'm working with, they're all fantastic people, and I've grown quite close with them over the past number of weeks, you know, and it's something you have to, because, you know, you're working 12-hour days with them now at this stage, and they're doing whatever they can to help you on top of the workload they're balancing. So, like, I was expecting to get out and get stuck straight into it, but I kind of realised that I would probably need a bit of help along the way, and I've got that, thankfully, from the unit I'm with.
So what sort of stuff are you doing? What's the day-to-day role at the moment?
It chops and changes. You know, you kind of have the usual stuff you're dealing with, but the main thing we're kind of looking for at the minute is for people to adhere to the guidelines that's been given out to them. You know, as you've seen the whole way across the country, there was checkpoints everywhere to kind of dictate where people were going, because there might have been word of people over the Easter weekend kind of slackening on the social distancing and maybe traveling to places they didn't necessarily need to go to. So, like, kind of stuff like that, trying to figure out if people that are out there are out there for a genuine reason, that they actually need to go to the shop, or maybe they're doing their little bit of exercise or whatever they need to do to keep themselves sane, because it's hard to be locked in the house the whole time. But you know, you could come across a lot of people that might be just going out, maybe going to the beach or on their way to having a picnic somewhere or something that's not necessarily ideal in the situation we're in. And kind of trying to help everybody stay safe is basically what you'd be trying to do. Is kind of, you know, the government give out the guidelines for a reason, and it's not just you know, it's not just given out lightly. It took a lot for it to come to the situation that it's at. So, you know, everybody's just trying to look after each other and trying to do what's necessary just to help, obviously, flatten the curve, you know.
And it is so important, and it seems as though it is working as well, and that the message is getting across. From your point of view as a guard and your reasons for getting into the Gardaí, like, I'm sure there were many reasons, but stopping people in cars from going to the beach or just wanting to get their kids out of the house for 4 or 5 hours probably wasn't what you had envisaged doing. Has that been difficult getting your head around that actually this is probably one of the more important things you're ever going to do, as straightforward as it seems in some ways?
That's absolutely amazing. It's crazy to think, you know, in this day and age, we're in the situation we're in. Like, and looking at the country so far, we've probably handled it probably one of the best out of most of the countries, you know. And as you say, a lot of people are actually taking on the advice, and the work's absolutely amazing. Everybody's doing, you know. You look at the people that are really coming into contact with it, like the ones in HSE there that are, you know, they're working day in, day out, and it's frightening. But you know, on our side of things, it's kind of it's crazy to maybe have to stop somebody that's, you know, especially with the weather we've had, we've been blessed with the weather, and somebody that wants to go to the beach or wants to go for a walk with their kids to somewhere that is unnecessary, and kind of advising them not to, and telling them to maybe go back to their home and go for the walk within the two kilometers of their house. Like, it's something I didn't think it was going to be part of the job, but unfortunately, with the situation we're in, it's probably one of the most important things we're gonna have to do for the next number of months. And you know, to be fair, 90% of the people, if not more, have been extremely compliant, and they do listen. And anybody you come across is genuine or going to the shops, you know. So it's a strange time to be kind of just thrown in to the front line, you know.
What has the attitude of people been like? You talk about 90, probably more than 90% been very much compliant. Have you come across people who just can't get their heads around it, or just feel that their rights have been impinged in some way, that they should be allowed to go and do whatever the hell they want, whenever they want still?
Well, to be honest with you, it's been quite refreshing to see how many people have actually realized how important it is. And anybody I've come across, I haven't come across anybody that's said otherwise. They're going to the shop, you know, and they're really just getting out of the house to get their essentials, to go to the shop most of the time. You know, as I keep saying there, the attitude of people, it's absolutely amazing. And as you see on videos and whatever, what's going on Facebook and Twitter and all the social media platforms, The support that people are giving, it's crazy. You could be standing on a checkpoint and people would be going to the shop, and then they'd be coming back through it maybe an hour later, and they'd hand you out maybe a bottle of water, you know, coming back from the shop, offering you whatever they can, you know. And it's actually amazing to see how much respect people have for you in that sense. And I think it's kind of, you know, in such a crisis the country's in, it's helping the country pull together, you know, and everybody's kind of trying to push in the one direction.
It does seem to be one of the positives, and maybe it's still too early to talk about positives to come out of this, of the respect that is there once again for frontline workers, that in this time of crisis, that the people that we need to step forward has stepped forward. And you talk about maybe the health professionals there who are right front and center in a frightening situation in terms of how many of them are picking up this virus, but you're also front and center, and you're meeting, I'm sure, a huge amount of people every day, and you've no control. You can't control your contacts over the course of a 12-hour shift, I'd imagine. Are you frightened about the virus and about the positions you find yourself in?
It's a hard one to answer, you know. I wouldn't necessarily say frightened, you know, where the nurses in the HSE and that are coming face to face with it on a daily basis, and you said that the number of them that are picking up the virus it's staggering, and it's scary to see, because they're putting their life on the line to help others. And like, I think that's probably the biggest message to put out there, that them people are putting their life on the line to help flatten the curve. And for anybody to go against the guidelines and go against the information we've been given, it's completely disrespectful, and it's nearly like it's a kick in the teeth to the people that are working out there trying to help Flatten Perth and trying to keep everybody safe, you know. So like, I wouldn't necessarily say scared. It's something that you have to deal with, and it's something that I was told when I thought about joining the Guards was the Guards normally 90% are running into the middle of something where the other 90% are running out of. So we're kind of in that situation in a broader sense, you know, but it's kind of just something we have to get on with. And, you know, as I say, with the people that I'm working with at the minute within the unit, it's you're building close friends, and you have no choice, because a lot of the time they're the only people that I have contact with. You know, I haven't been up home in maybe 5 or 6 weeks at this stage, you know, and, you know, you don't get a chance. You only chat with the family and the girlfriend over either the phone or whatever kind of WhatsApp messages or whatever. But, you know, it's refreshing to have people like that around you and be able to build a friendship in the units, you know.
Yeah, like, it must be so difficult as well for your girlfriend and for your family, because, as you say, if you haven't been home for 5-6 weeks, it's probably going to be another 5-6 weeks at least before you get to see them personally. And they're at home, they don't know what you're doing day to day, and while you're probably very much in control of the situation and realize it's, as you say, not as frightening maybe as they're imagining, that they're letting their imaginations run wild at times and they're sitting at home worrying about what you're doing day to day, that it must be an incredibly anxious situation for them.
It would be, you know, like, I try to keep in contact with them as much as I can and talk to them whenever I get a chance. You know, it's obviously difficult for them because, as you say, they don't really know what I'm getting up to most days. Whereas maybe myself, I wouldn't be following them in with all the information. I probably should be, you know, but as they say, it's part of their job. I suppose they do be worrying at a time, but it's at the end of the day, it's kind of what I signed up for. And it's something that I, maybe not in the sense of this, but I wanted to join the Guards to have a nice, good, stable job, you know, and with the variety of the job and having something different to go to every day. But at the minute, it's kind of just trying to push and trying to help flatten the curve with everybody else that's out there that's doing amazing work, you know.
Yeah. What were your reasons for joining the Guards? What was the attraction?
I don't know. You know, one of them things, I suppose, it is a really stable job. And I have a grandfather of mine was in the Guards, but he's retired as long as I'm born. So it wasn't really that him influenced me, but from speaking to him and even just seeing it myself now over the past number of weeks from joining it, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. You know, you're nearly part of a broad overall unit, you know. I've always been involved in team sports my whole life. So coming into the Guards, it's nearly like joining a massive team. Everybody's pushing together and everybody's pushing in the one direction. And as I say again, it's just maybe the variety in the job and a stable job at that. You know, I look at now, my mother and father are both off work and they're collecting a welfare payment. So having a stable job where you're having a paycheck coming in at the end of the week, every week, I'm kind of blessed in that situation at the minute, where a lot of people are maybe finding themselves on the welfare payment, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's an incredibly difficult situation for so many people and a growing number of people. And I guess what the Guards, and again, the frontline staff, but particularly the Guards in terms of the community, and like, communities really come to the fore during this, of people looking out for each other's neighbours, sticking together. It's probably maybe not something you overly thought about when you're getting into the Guards, that community role, but you see it all the time, whether it's delivering the shopping to the elderly, that there's a role there in keeping people, and that little connection that the Guards can do, that probably has always happened, maybe not to this extent, but has probably largely gone unnoticed.
Oh, it has. I would say, like, within the Guards, it is a community based organization. Basically, you know, we're there for the community. We're there to help people. We're not there to do anything else. We're here to, you know, obviously enforce the law and keep people safe. But we're basically broadly based around the community. You know, it's massive. You see it now to a crazy extent where people are delivering shopping, you know, and it's overwhelming to see people giving you so much respect for the likes of that. But at the end of the day, it's part of our job, and you know, I'd say any guards out there that are doing that, they're not looking for a pat on the back. It's a lot, what a lot of people signed up for is to be part of an overall community and help people throughout their life. That's kind of, you know, a reason why a lot of people have joined the guards, to kind of help people and you know, maybe make a difference in somebody's life.
You were saying before we came on air about the shifts and 12-hour shifts and four on, four off, which probably would suit in a certain way to being an inter-county player, and you'd be able to get back to Donegal for a few days and put in some heavy duty lifting when needed during championship time. That's obviously not there at the moment. How are you coping without that competitive edge, without getting to go out in the field every Sunday?
It's hard to deal with it. You know, all of a sudden, it just we were up in convoy and training on a Wednesday night, and we were told that, you know, that night where everything was pulled. We were told there's no more training for the foreseeable future. I think we were given maybe a 10 week or a 12 week period where we were hoping to get back after that, but unfortunately, it's pushed on where we're not getting anywhere near it, and it's not looking to be coming anytime soon either. It's hard to keep yourself ticking over. You know, you be in contact with the boys on regular occasions, you be chatting them every week. And you know, it's hard to see where it's going from here. But as I say, without doubt, I don't know what to do with myself. You know, on my 4 days off, I'd be out training, you'd be out meeting up with the boys, going to the gym, doing whatever you needed to do, getting preparation for championship, you know, and it's coming right up to that time now where we'd be getting stuck into the championship. So it's a tough one to take, you know, but at the end of the day, it's for the greater good to keep everybody to try flatten this curve and try to help everybody push on.
Yeah. So what are you doing for those 3-4 days to try and keep your head in the right space, and when you're not at home and there's probably only a certain amount of training you can do within the 2 kilometres. Like, are there people you can talk to that you can sort of take your mind off it?
Yeah, well, it's funny enough, I have, in the state I'm living in, that there's a nice size green area out the front of it. So any running that needs to be done that I'm being sent on, I'm doing there. Luckily I got my hands on some weights and stuff. One of the skippers in the station looked after me and got me a few bits. So I'm using that as much as I can, you know. As you say, the likes of Paul Fisher up home there, the strength and conditioning coach for the panel, he's probably as busy as ever was, trying to keep everybody on their programs and trying to keep everybody up to scratch, you know. So you say, I have plenty to be doing, and just doing it on your own is the toughest part of it, where you'd normally be doing it in groups. Trying to motivate yourself to keep all that going by yourself is probably the hardest part of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's probably not much fun kicking 80-yard kickouts when you're the only person doing it. You have to walk down the 80 yards to pick them up the other side.
Yeah, it's a long way to walk. It's a long way to walk to go pick up the ball and kick it again. But these things need to be done. Whenever I do get a chance, I'm trying to get out as much as I can and try to keep on top of the fitness we were building towards, because the panel is starting to develop nicely, you know. We were starting to kick on and find a real good flow, and unfortunately, with the time that's come, we were obviously stopped. And at the end of the day, it's all about maintaining what we have and being ready to kick on whenever we do get a chance to get back.
Yeah, and I think everyone's come to probably the sad enough realization over the last 2 or 3 days that there's not going to be any sport in front of crowds for the entire summer, and so much of the summer is built around those big days, whether it's in Clonus or Ballybuffet, and like you're thinking of a Donegal, Tyrone, first round of the Ulster Championship, and the hype and the build-up and everything that would have been around that, and that's gone, it seems, for this year, and we just got to get on with it. Like, where are you with what should happen, hoping that we can have some matches between now and the end of the year? Like, Should games be played behind closed doors? Could you see a championship behind closed doors?
It all depends on, you know, over the stats over the next number of months with the virus. It depends on, you know, how the curve's going as such. Obviously, at the minute, the only thing I see what a possibility is a games behind closed doors, you know. But then again, how do you control it? It's hard to know. Like, you're joining up with a panel of whatever amount of players are on the panel and whatever amount of backroom staff, you know, and then you're separating. And, you know, where does that stop? You know, you've the guts of every county gathering to train. And, you know, if there was one virus that broke out in one camp, then, like, God only knows where it could spread to. So it's kind of all about the statistics on how low we can keep the numbers and how positive we can keep the curve coming back down and flattening it, you know. But at the end of the day, it's a summer without football is going to be hard to take. But you would just hope and pray that there's going to be some sort of championship at some stage. But at the end of the day, you know, it's probably not the most important thing at the minute. Football will be there and it always will be there. But, you know, you're just putting it's crazy because, you know, you'd look at all the summers over the past number of years where that's all you've known, you know, the amount of stuff, it's just all about the build up to the championship, and you just want to get out there. And especially with the weather that's been there, it's nearly a kick in the teeth to see the weather. You can't get out and get a training session and get prepared for games. So,
yeah, I guess it's probably different as well for the GAA and for inter-county players compared to something like the Premier League, where there's a real financial incentive for everybody involved to make sure these happen, that when life, and hopefully life does get back to some sort of normality, like, as you say, you know, parents have lost jobs, like lots of players' families, lots of players will have lost their jobs as well, that for an awful lot of inter-county players, actually, for once, playing inter-county may not necessarily be their priority between now and the end of the year, to be trying to get their life back to normal.
Unfortunately, that's kind of a situation we find ourselves in, you know. For me, I'm absolutely blessed to still have a job and still be able to earn a paycheck at the end of the week, you know. Whereas a lot of people find themselves in a situation where they don't have that. And I know it's all about getting your life back on track come the end of all this, and whenever we are kind of eased off it, whenever we see an improvement. But at the end of the day, like, I know fine well the inter-county footballers all around the country, like, they're specially driven people. They're not just there to make up numbers, you know. They're always going to come back, and they're always going to be there for the next whatever amount of years, you know. So, like, as I say, people will look to get their life back on track, but at the end of the day, I can guarantee every footballer, every hurler out there are thinking at the back of their mind, when's this championship going to happen?
Are many of the people around Navan recognising the Donegal goalkeeper in their midst?
I'm trying to keep it under wraps, you know. I'm trying to keep the head down. And
you have enough trouble.
No, well, to be fair, we've been grand so far, but this is it. Just trying to keep the head down and go unnoticed, you know.
Yeah, well, best of luck with that, Sean. It's been brilliant to talk to you, and thanks a lot for taking the call, and thanks for all you're doing at the moment as well, and very best of luck over the coming weeks or months, and hopefully we'll see you in happier circumstances and back out in the pitch very soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks very much for having me, Nathan.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.